goes for goal and finishes off the PSG victory.
Nuno Mendes est lancé, Nuno Mendes navigue, Nuno Mendes passe devant Cuadrado, le tir, oh il est beau celui-là, le but de Nuno Mendes.
You know the football, it is what it is.
Le premier but de Ronald Colomboigny avec le Paris Saint-Germain, ah, quelle joie!
Hello and welcome to PSG Review, also known as the show where things are going pretty well. By any metric, things are, at the very least, just fine and even pretty stable, but somehow there's an undertone, a subtext of something a little unsettling also. This is not too far from what the team is experiencing on the pitch as well, but we get into it all very shortly. And to be honest with you, I am feeling pretty good about the season so far and the project as it stands and aims for the years and seasons to come. My name is Mikko and this is PSG Review. Find and follow me and feel free to talk to me online at PSG Review Pod on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok. It is simply at PSG Review. You can also find me on Blue Sky, and not a lot is happening over there, but anytime the tide turns and the critical mass moves away from Twitter, should that ever happen, I'm there ready and waiting also, but for now, not too actively. Share this podcast with your friends and enemies alike if you think that this is something that they could get down with. All the new episodes are also now available on YouTube, so that's an option that is available to you, audio only, even there. PSG are through to the quarterfinals of Champions League. This is a statement that is true and applies, by the way, to both men and women's teams as well. And today we will talk about the women's team a little bit later, as Coupe de France final is also something that has been achieved on that side. But in men's side, we aren't quite there yet. So where are we? I hear you ask, and you are in luck because today I'm here talking about it all with Alfonso from the PSG Fan Club Chicago. How have you been?
Good. I've been very good.
There's been a lot of football, PSG football and otherwise. Not a lot of time for anything else, I guess.
Oh my gosh, it's been picking and choosing, and then with my schedule, I've been listening to a lot of the games online on the radio, so you get a different perspective. You know, then I have to go back and watch the games later. So it's, you know, that's been a learned experience. But yeah, it's just so much and really so fast.
Hey, let's get into it all. So PSG beat Real Sociedad in the round of 16 in the Champions League. That result wasn't really in question too much. It was sort of fairly clear and emphatic victory, at least after the first half of the first match, which could have gone either way at that point. We have a team that is aiming for the future, which a star player who won't most likely be part of that future. We have three Ligue 1 draws on the trot and Coupe de France quarterfinal on Wednesday. We are recording this on Monday. And that match quarterfinal is against the only French club who has beaten us this season. That's Nice. So there's a lot there. How are you feeling about the project in this particular junction?
I'm actually excited. I was thinking about this the past few days, and you know, of course, Killian's most likely isn't going to be here next year. I'm excited because the change that's coming, I think it is change that was long overdue in terms of the club's culture, from the perspective of bringing in talent. This is, you know, as far as I can remember, the youngest PSG team that I, you know, that I can recall in the 30 years that I've been supporting the team. It's a solid young core. They play for one another, and they seem to be excited. So I think, you know, when Killian's gone, I think in a lot of ways, as far as what's happening with the team and the vibe, I think that's a good thing. But then, you know, the trade-off is that you lose an arguably the best player in the world. In my opinion, the best player in the world. But in the long run, I think that's something that may actually benefit us, just from, you know, the club culture and growing the club, and even as far as player recruitment.
I have been feeling the same way, and I have said before that the only downside of Kylian Mbappe leaving is that we are losing the best football player in the world. That's the only downside of it. It sounds like it's a quite a big downside, but and to an extent it is. But I think that I think that there is for those of us who are following this thing sort of like blow by blow, this whole project, how the PSG has been developing in the last couple of years, or even the last decade, or even more so. Maybe we have a little bit of a different understanding, and we can talk about Kylian Mbappe and the way he has conducted himself in a moment. But like I said, he does seem to be finally on his way out. If the rumors are true and the transfer gurus won't be further humiliated by him as has happened before, but I think this time it could really be in the books to be happening. But Luis Enrique has started testing things out without him, which I think is a reasonable and a right thing to do against Stade Reims last weekend. For instance, Gonçalo Ramos was playing very well for the first half. He had many chances and scored essentially only one goal, but the other one was an own goal in the end, but he would have very likely gotten it if the defender didn't get there first. And then we have options like Bradley Barcola, Randall Colomwani, Dembele, Lee Kang in. Asensio is injured right now. He will be back, of course, next year. There will also be Xavi Simons. I assume that he will be back. How does our attack look like to you? Because the big question, of course, is that should Kylian Mbappe be replaced by a forward, a striker or winger or some kind of offensive player? How do you feel about that?
Well, I think, you know, when you go to players, when you look at players like, you know, with the talent of Kylian Mbappe, I think people have to remember you don't replace that. You know, that. You have to approach that from a different mindset. You're not going to go out and find, oh, we got another one. It's not going to happen. In my mind, I'm always like, you leave that alone, but you come up with something that's more practical and what's going to work well within the system you have. When I look at someone like Ramos, he reminds me so much of a Cavani or Ibrahimovic that it's hilarious to me, because it's like, how did they manage to get this guy? I think he's going to do very well when he's getting, you know, given more opportunities to play. He's just the old school finisher. I'm looking at him and I keep thinking this guy could be a PSG version of Gabriel Batistuta. It's early in his career, but I'm seeing some things that I really like. Kind of like a Paletta or something, probably better than that. In terms of the attacks, I mean, Barcola I love, and I always thought that the biggest issue with Barcola was just him actually getting a chance to prove himself. Loved Dembele, but I think the thing for me with Dembele, and I felt this way a few months ago, was like, I'm not relying on Dembele to score goals. I'm relying on him to help create opportunities for other people to score. If Dembele ever starts to score goals, oh my God, it's going to be insane. Because you can't stop this guy. I mean, when he gets going, it's crazy. But for whatever reason, his finishing is just horrible. He can create the opportunity, but you know, as far as finishing, I'm like, roll the dice. Xavi Simons coming back next year, it just makes it so much more of a dynamic attack, because it's going to come at you from all over the place. So this year, everyone, you know, it's pretty obvious that it's like, PSG's attack and their first, you know, choice is looking at Kylian to do what he does. And he's delivered for the most part. But next year, I think it's going to be that much more difficult, because it's like, well, okay, who do you really play off of? You want to shut down Ramos? Okay, fine. You got Barcola over there and you got Dembele here. You got Simons here and so forth. As far as if you try to overplay or focus on only one particular part of that attack up front. I think it also opens up more opportunities from the midfield. I mean, we know that both Zaire Emery and Vitinha are not afraid to shoot, and they actually have good shots. Mm-hmm. So, attacking-wise, I'm pretty excited. I'm not sure who I would bring in. I'm more concerned about getting what we have right now, prepare for next season, and then building off of that. I think that's the way you want to do it. Not playing Kylian, in a couple of games. This is, even if Kylian were staying, I would hope that they would limit the amount of time that he's playing right now, because it's at that stage of the year where you know, you're really focusing on Champions League, and you have a legitimate chance at actually winning Champions League. You may not be a favorite, but you're on to the next round, so you have as good a chance as anyone else, and you want to make sure that you're healthy. This is the first Champions League quarterfinals that we're going into where I think, what, like 95% or 90% of the team is healthy, that I can recall. So this team's sitting pretty good. But yeah, going back to the attack, you know, I'm not sure who I would bring in. There's noise all over the place. And, you know, the one thing that we've learned over the past couple seasons is this team has somehow managed to come up with, you know, they managed to come up with some pretty good players, like, out of the blue.
Yeah.
So
I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it's going to go and how it's going to be developed. But I think that's also one of the things, and some people think that this is a little bit of a, there's some kind of a scandal, or this is some kind of a radical move by Luis Enrique, that he's putting Kylian Mbappe on the bench almost as if it was a penalty or some kind of a punishment, which I don't think that it is at all, because the thing about it is that we have now several months left. But we will also have to know, okay, so if we play like this, if we have Gonzalo Ramos there, if we have Kolomwani there, like, what kind of players are these without Pap? Because somebody like Gonzalo Ramos, for instance, I think that he's entirely sort of more or less incompatible with Kylian Mbappe, because he's a target player. But when Mbappe is on the pitch, every ball is pretty much always going to go to Kylian Mbappe, so he's not getting a service that he needs. You remember that happened also with Edinson Cavani. It sort of started to happen a little bit more, that he was scoring so many goals, and it's funny that you say how, you know, he reminds you of Cavani and even Zlatan, I think especially Cavani for me. But Cavani was scoring so many different goals, but then when Neymar and Mbappe started to play more directly towards the goal, what happened is that Cavani became a little bit of not a useless player, but his impact was far smaller because he didn't get that service anymore. So the same thing applies to Gonzalo Ramos. If he doesn't get the service, then what can he do as a target player? Target players really need that service. And I think it's very good that now we can see the coach trying different solutions and different combinations. So we can see that when the summer comes, okay, who are the players that should be part of this project? And are there maybe some people that you would have to see that, okay, how is it going? How is it going with certain players? Was that a mistake? Is there another player that could come instead? So I think that what's happening right now is very exciting and very intriguing. I'm really curious to see how the next couple of months are going.
It is like to see balance come back. That's what it is for me. It's, you know, it's not an over-reliance on one, because, you know, the thing that scares me with Kylian is, if Kylian were to have gotten hurt at a certain point, it's like, oh, you know, oh crap, you know, what are we going to do? When he's gone, you know, I expect there'd be a little bit more depth in all of those positions. So if someone's out for whatever reason, we'll be okay. The drop-off won't be so drastic, where it's like you're scrambling. I think your description of when, you know, Neymar and Mbappe came in with Cavani, that was spot on. And, you know, remember, there were even some issues between Neymar and Cavani in particular, from what we were led to believe, which I still don't understand that, but it is what it is.
Yeah. There are nicer things to reminisce than some of those issues that we have had there in the yesteryear. But let's talk about this Kylian Mbappe situation, about it more broadly, perhaps. So here's my feeling about him in summary. I think he has done great things for the club throughout the year, 7 years. His statistics are very impressive. But for me, whatever he has done, it's always been ever so slightly shadowed by the indecision. Is he staying or is he going? There's been that that thing that is not just sort of now. Now it's one of the, like, it's rarely as clear as it is currently. Usually it's a little bit like, well, is it going to, what is going to happen? And I find that has had this kind of unbalancing impact to the group dynamic many, many times in the previous years. And having said that, still the numbers are great, so you can't really, you know, complain about that. And right now, I think he's used exactly the way that he should be used for the benefit of the collective as needed. But you know, in my opinion, after what he did in Monaco, you know, after the second after the halftime for the second half, starting the match as a captain and then walking up to the executive box with his mom and whatever, and not going to finish the match with the players that are his teammates for all intents and purposes for the next months. And that's not something I don't think that captain should do. So I don't think that he should be a captain, but I don't have otherwise a huge problem with him, because he will do as he has always done. This is the kind of personality that he has. And of course, the way that he's been now key player against Real Sociedad, he had a solid interest against Reims as well. So he seems to have now a little bit of that anger and urgency, which makes him world class, because otherwise he's seemed a bit nonplussed sometimes at the pitch recently, and he has taken it a little bit granted. What's your Mbappe take? We all seem to have Mbappe take. What is your approach to his whole, the way that he has conducted himself? What is his role? How do you feel about it?
I was thinking about this the last couple of days, and I think it is disappointing to me, because on the one hand, there's things that he's done that I agree with. I like, for instance, the way he's, you know, taking control of his image and what he's associated with. But then there's these things where he comes off as like a, you know, just comes off as a diva or a spoiled brat. And I think, you know, the problem is he's gotten drunk on his power that he's been given at PSG, or the perception of the power that he has, to the extent where he's disrespected both the power that he's been given as well as the club. And yeah, the club, you know, to a certain extent is at fault for giving him so much. But I think at the same time, you know, if you're going to become a great player, there's a certain way that you behave and do things. And I just kept looking at, you know, you look at the way he reacts to if he's being subbed out, or for instance, when he wasn't being, you know, when he wasn't starting. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, you've got the Olympics coming up, you've got the Euros coming up. Any matches that you get a chance to rest, you should be all over it, because that's going to help you prepare that much, help in your preparation for this summer's activities that much more. You're not going to go into those two tournaments wiped out, or God forbid, with some stupid ass injury because you played in the match where you really didn't need to play at all. It just reminds me of a spoiled brat right now. And I kept thinking about it. It's like, you know, again, because we're all assuming he's going to be at Madrid next year. Just like, he's going to be in for a hell of a culture shock next year, because they're not going to put up with that. You know, he's going to know from day one that, hey, this is where you're at on the food chain, and that it's not a topic of discussion. And anytime your head gets big, we're going to knock you right back down. So I've been disappointed more so because I just think he's disrespected the club. And when I mean the club, I'm talking, you know, everyone from his fellow teammates to the supporters. So as far as his playing, he's been fine, but you know, when you're a player like him, it's a little bit more than just, you know, you're playing, there's more to it than just the way you play.
I think so, and I think something that people are also overlooking a little bit is that the amount of money that is being paid to his account on a monthly basis by PSG is astronomical. It's really crazy. And sometimes people are saying, oh, you know, he's better than Ramos, or he's better than, oh, he's the best player in the world. He's supposed to be better than everybody else. He's paid like, not twice, he's played thrice. You know, maybe they pay him quadruple what they're playing to some of these other players. That's like the same thing is that if you're going to paying for five-star hotel, you're not going to be entirely happy with the decent three-star service because you are paying for the whole thing, and he is the thing. So now he's kind of getting back to his level. Maybe he's gotten a little bit over his own ego. I hope so. I hope that the kind of warning went through after that Monaco match, which I thought was really quite outrageous. I hope that he understands that he can't just even if the ultras seem to be broadly on his side, it's not the way he can conduct himself, and it's gonna turn against him. And I 100% agree with you. When he's gonna go to, let's assume that he's gonna go to Real Madrid, but wherever he's gonna go to a big team that is probably gonna have a kind of a culture that that you can't just go there and mess around. You can't just go there and do that type of things and expect to get away with that. In Paris, maybe Nasser Al-Khelaifi and other directors of the whole organization have been wanting to hold on to him so tightly that he's been given all these privileges, but he doesn't have that leverage anymore. So things are changing, but it's really interesting to see how it's gonna go. And like you were saying earlier, like, sure, we're not necessarily the favorites to win the Champions League. I don't expect PSG to win the Champions League this year, but the favorites don't always win Champions League. There's enough surprises, so you never know. And we're still in that competition. Of course, it's gonna depend who we're gonna play against, but anything can happen. And I think that he still has some time to work on his legacy. I think there's a certain legacy that is already there. But in Paris, with one Champions League, you would become an immortal hero in Real Madrid. Maybe five is not enough for you to be in the top 10 legends of that organization. So it's going to be a rude awakening for him. I think most probably there, even if he will play probably fine. I'm sure he's going to be fine there. But it's going to be something new.
Yeah. So, you know, and for both of us, you know, and I think for most of us, it's like, you know, when he's gone, the thing that I am looking forward to when he's gone is the no more drama of dealing with, you know, a player that's so high profile that he just comes off as a spoiled brat. I mean, you know, Neymar's gone, Messi's gone, and now this guy's gone.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, of the three, I think he's actually been the worst of the three by far, because I think he's been given a lot more than the other two. Mm. And in terms of his behavior, I actually think he's been worse.
I'm not sure if I agree with that, but I hear what I get your point. Like, I think I think what Messi did was just enough. Like, he was like Kylian Mbappe has given us the highlights. Neymar also gave us highlights, but he lacked discipline maybe, and then he had this injuries that were not entirely his fault. Of course, there's only so much he could do, but he wasn't really like living the healthiest lifetime. I think Mbappe has given us the highest highs, and then he's also been most difficult because that's just also who he is, and he's a very strong character as he's allowed to be, like you were saying. Also, I also respect the way he has taken control of his image and whatever, but I also think that there's also a way, it's a slippery slope that you don't sort of like become too paranoid about it, or you start looking, like you start finding a conspiracies where there's just maybe an error, mistake, misunderstanding or something like that. So it will be interesting to see how it goes, but I hear when you're saying that there's an argument to be made that he's also been quote unquote the worst because of the amount of leeway just the amount of leverage that he's had.
Yeah, because and going back to Neymar, and I think about this yesterday, even this morning, it was like you can say a lot of things about Neymar, and the biggest disappointment was just his entrance. But when he's played for PSG, there was never, and it's the same with Mbappe as well, there's never a doubt that they're putting their best out there. I just always, you know, the last year or so, watching Mbappe, where he's basically like the man now, I'm just like, I don't recall Neymar just being so disrespectful in terms of just, you know, even when he was subbed out, you know, I just never saw that type of reaction, you know, when compared to Mbappe. I'm like, yeah, you can go to, there's a, you know, he's such a, you know, a competitor that he wants to play all the time. It's like, I get that. But, you know, when you compare the two, I just, you know, for me, I'm just like, you just seem more of a pain in the ass.
I hear you.
You know, when he's subbed out or when he's not playing, it's like, dude, chill out.
Yeah. I think the challenge, in real terms, the challenge with him has also been that he wants to be the top scorer. He wants to break records. Like, when, like, Neymar never really, like, I'm sure he wanted to get good stats and all of that stuff, but it wasn't as obsessed about winning everything and competing against Cristiano Ronaldo's goals now in Saudi Arabian League or whatever Holland is doing in Premier League. Like Mbappe's, I think it means too much to him to be on top of that thing. And maybe that is exactly if he is indeed, if Cristiano Ronaldo has been his idol, because there's another guy to whom it seems quite important to be on top of every table and every scoring chart and whatever. So I think that's kind of something that, okay, that's all well and good, and we are benefiting a lot from those goals that Mbappe scores and has scored. Of course, even this year he has scored a lot of goals, but it's been very lackluster performance. There hasn't been a lot of that sense of urgency, which I think now there is a little bit more. So I'm happy to see that, and I think that now he knows that if he wants to get those goals, if he gets 20 minutes in a match to play after, you know, like if he's subbed in at 70 or half an hour after 60 minutes of play, then he needs to try to get a few goals in, and there's going to be a lot less time, and he has to take it seriously. And maybe there's a point that he wants to also prove, but I really agree with you also that he should be used the way that it is, and it is for his own benefit also. It's not our problem how he's going to be playing next August. Most likely it's going to be somebody else's problem, but he's going to have a summer of no rest. Genuinely, and whichever new team is going to pay a lot of money to him are not going to be happy if he's going to come like completely knackered after the summer holidays, exhausted and that. So he will have a lot to navigate. Tell me how you feel about Luis Enrique. How would you rate his time in Paris so far? We are sort of like, let's say, around maybe 75% of or thereabouts of the first campaign for him. How would you rate his time in Paris so far?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I put it at a 7. And it's a 7 because he does something that cracks me up. You could look at his lineups when a match starts, and a lot of times we're all like, what the hell's going on? But, you know, and a lot of people have pointed this out, but when he makes his adjustments mid-match, he's almost like spot on every time, which cracks me up because, you know, I'll make a comparison to Alex Ferguson. So one of the things I liked about Alex Ferguson is that he wasn't afraid to try things, very pragmatic when he needed to be. But one of my biggest criticisms of Alex Ferguson has always been his mid-match adjustments. And to me, I'm like, and in any sport, that's really hard to do. Just across the board. I think mid-match, you know, adjustments are really hard because, you know, it just is, from at least from my perspective. And for whatever reason, Enrique seems to nail it like almost all the time, almost to a point where it's like, why the hell didn't you do this in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
So that part's funny to me. And the other thing that I like is I really like the way that he manages dealing with the media. You know, there's not, it's refreshing to have a manager who sounds like a manager, who doesn't sound like he knows it all, who doesn't come off as arrogant. I'm going to make a comparison to Tuchel, because my biggest issue with Tuchel was like, it was never his fault. It was, you know, it's just like never this guy's fault. If there was a mistake made in the game or whatever, and it's like, dude, you literally put this crap lineup out there and they didn't perform. This is on you. You know, I've never gotten that impression with Enrique. It's just refreshing. I think, you know, maybe there's a thing from when he remember what it was like when he played, because he played for so long and it's such and for such a high profile club. I think he's still learning. The fact that Mbappe essentially gave up his power when he's pretty much told everybody he's not going to be there next year made it that much easier for Enrique to say, all right, you know what? Now it's time for me to get ready for the next couple seasons because I don't have to deal with this crap anymore. Mm-hmm. So I'm quite pleased with him. I think, you know, he's the right manager for us at this time. Had we got him a few years ago, I don't know if it would have worked, but I definitely like him as a manager. And I'm looking forward to seeing him for the next few years because I think he's here to really build on this team. And let me, one thing I'd like to point out, I think he understands and appreciates what young players, having young personnel, is for a team. Because there's a different type of energy that you're going to get from younger players than you're going to get from seasoned players. It's a combination of hunger. They're younger, so they're not as worn down. And they seem to be more receptive to try things or to listen. So that this is, you know, so I'm really excited with what I see with Enrique.
Yeah, they bounce back also a little bit quicker than some of the older players, which is just, you know, human biology. It is what it is. I think it's very funny how you were saying. I was talking with Charles from the PSG fan club Toronto just the other week, and we were talking about exactly the same thing. Is that what Luis Enrique does very well is that he makes the right choices and he fixes things up in the halftime. What is confusing is the initial lineup. Like, that's you're looking at what are you thinking? But then, you know, he's trying it out. It's like it's almost like he's a comedian and he's trying out a joke and whether it lands or it doesn't land, and he's not sure, but he's just trying it out and seeing how it goes. And if it lands, it's gonna look like a profit. But you know, there's also times where those moves to fix things up at halftime are very much necessary. So that is something that we also see very much eye to eye. In terms of the campaign, before we start talking about other subject matter, what do you think about the now next summer? So it's been sort of more or less established now Kylian Mbappe is not going to be part of the PSG squad for the next year. We were talking a little bit about that whole thing about how should be like how that should impact the recruitment of PSG. And of course you were mentioning already that there's not one player that's gonna come, and that of course is true, and also the amount of money that is just coming from his salaries is probably at least 3-4 even 5 pretty good players you can hire with that money. He's really has been very expensive. What do you think about, for instance, what kind of profile should PSG be looking at? Maybe something in defense and midfield. What do you think?
Yes, to both. Defensively, the thing that's been frustrating, you know, for all of us, you know, I think I can speak for all of us as fans, it is giving up these stupid-ass goals. I mean, you know, we're not talking like highlight film goals. We're talking just dumb defensive errors. That just needs to stop. If you're going to, you know, if you're going to be a team, you know, a team that wins Champions League and such, you can't allow it to happen. And it's frustrating because we all remember 4 or 5 years ago when PSG's defense was like basically second to none. You know, like they were not giving up goals and they were even scoring goals. So defensively, I like to see us go back to having just a solid, you know, defensive group where teams are afraid to play you because they're like defensively, they know it's going to be tough. Midfield, you know, you can never, in my opinion, have enough depth in midfield, depth that provides you with all types of options because, you know, the midfield is the engine that makes the team go. But again, I'm really not sure who I would bring in or even how it would play out with our current profile. And we have two young players that are so good. You know, they're going to be the core of our midfield for a while. So it's kind of like, do you bring in a veteran, you know, with the experience, but not just with the experience, but with a mental profile that's kind of like, you know, I've always said we needed a player like a Thiago Motta.
Mm-hmm.
or Maxwell. We need someone with that mindset. I don't know if there's anyone out there that we could get, but that's the player that I think we really need to have. That's what we've been missing for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at with that. But I think the refreshing thing is, I think the stress levels and expectations for, you know, going into the summer is going to be a blessing for everyone, because you're gonna end up with a training camp in July and August that's a lot more relaxed, and you're not going to have to deal with as much BS. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about that. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, rapidly defensively, we've got to straighten that out.
Yeah, and now Lucas Peraldo has been playing well. That's for sure. And there's another player, of course, that we don't know. That is Gabriel Mochardo from Brazil. Also, is sort of like a defensive midfielder, number six, supposed to be very promising player. But I must admit, I don't really know. I don't follow that league in any way, so I don't really know. I've of course seen the highlight reels, as probably many people have, but it's difficult to say how it's going to work out there. So one of my questions, I guess, is that when it comes to that midfield, and I'm one of those people who think that good number six is what is always needed. Like you kind of like build a lot around a solid good number six. So during Thomas Tuchel, when Marquinhos was playing as a six, that worked out very well. But then, of course, we had a solid defense. Otherwise, we had Thiago Silva and Kimpembe, and we had players of that caliber, and it worked out well. But Manuel Ugarte, he came in, he was really great. Now he had a little bit of a drop in form, and then of course now he's kind of like working himself back. So I think that's going to be a very big question. Is Manuel Ugarte and is Gabriel Mochardo, are those the players who can be the number sixes of the of let's say a team that is fighting for a Champions League trophy?
I don't know. You know, that's the thing. It's one of these things, like, and if you know, I guess if you're confident in saying yeah, then it is. But for me, I'm like, not knowing means I'm looking hard. I haven't seen anything to convince me wholeheartedly that either one of them could be. And it could be just, it's taking a little bit longer to adjust to everything, or, I mean, right now I'm not really seeing it. So it's like you need to bring someone else in. Even if you brought someone else in where you had to split it between them, that would be fine. But right now, I'm not feeling it.
With you, Al, I'm always also very happy that we can talk about the PSG women's team. The Champions League quarterfinals will be against Beko Häcken from Sweden, from Gothenburg, to be precise. There will also be Coupe de France final now against Fleury, who knocked out Lyon, which is a great achievement for them. I must say that, and it won't be easy for us, that final also. But there's a potential trophy there, and also PSG is pretty well placed in division on the French league, which has new playoff system. So literally, there's all to play for. Still in the run for three potential trophies, just like the men's team. How do you find this season on the women's side? How have you experienced that?
I'm excited. I think I'm excited for so many reasons, because I have to give it to Prashir. It was like when he got the job, you know, it was kind of like, he wasn't like his dad, which is good, because his dad was doing stuff where I think a lot of us were just kind of like, what the hell is he doing? I mean, I'd never seen a manager. It's like, you see what he's doing, but it defies all logic. And it's like, it's not like you're not a good manager. It's like, what you're doing makes no sense. With him, I think it took him time, you know, obviously, to figure out the personnel he had with this team, that he has with this team, and then how to get the most out of them. Finally switching to a back three, you know, I think what really helped is bringing in Gattano. Really helped make playing with the back three that much easier. That back three means that now you can push Sakina Khashoggi up to midfield. And I've always said this before, when it comes to Khashoggi and even Basha and Leon, I'm like, those two are midfielders being played as like left backs. It's the funniest thing to me, you know, that someone in French football figure that out, because it's so deceptive. It's like, oh, that person's a left back. It's like, right, buddy. I'm like, okay, you stick with that. You defend him like a left back, and you're going to have problems later on in the game. So I really like our women's team. I like the mix of younger players and older players. And we've got three or four younger players on this team that are like 19, 20, and they're going to be there for a while. And you've got some older players who are probably going to be there for the next couple, you know, another 2-3 years at the most. I'm thinking of, you know, Grace Guerrero. I'm thinking of, you know, I'm assuming Sakina's going to renew her contract. It sounds, you know, last we heard is that they're just really trying to iron out some things. And I think what it comes down to is, you know, how much more money can she get, which is going to come down to what players are going to move and who's not coming back. I don't think there's going to be, I don't anticipate any major changes, but what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, but I know that this is a very good women's team, and they need to do what they can to keep them together. The hardest part of this team is going to be dealing with how much it's going to cost to keep Tabitha Chiwenga.
Yeah.
It ain't going to be cheap, but you know what? She's worth it and more.
I think so.
Oh my God. She took to this team like a fish to water.
It's been one of the most remarkable things that I've seen in football in quite a long time, the way that it's coming. And you were mentioning Sakina Karshawi. There is a rumor now. There was a rumor that she could be on her way out to Barcelona, to be precise. There's also been rumors about her extension with Paris that would have been very close. That was earlier on. So it could be one of those. Maybe it's one of those things where she's just sort of like trying to get a little bit more money or better contract or whatever. Or maybe she's going to Barcelona. I don't know. It's difficult to say. I think going to Barcelona is a bit like...
It's a dumb move.
Yeah, they don't have any competition like in Spain. They are winning every match with ridiculous numbers. There's no real competition for them. The only time they have to really like play football is like in the Champions League final or thereabouts, you know, maybe semifinals or something like that. It's very few serious matches a year.
And it's hurt them in the past, though, because, you know, remember a few years ago when they played Lyon in the Champions League final and got their butts handed to them. Every journalist was saying, oh, Barca's going to win this. And almost everyone who actually watches again goes, no, Barca's going to get spanked.
Yeah.
And part of that problem was that they weren't getting the competition they needed in their league.
Yeah.
The thing, though, the reason why I said I think her going to Barcelona would be stupid is because she's won everything you can win at the club level in women's football. She's won Champions League with Lyon multiple times. She's won, you know, the D1 Arkema. She's won a Coupe de France. So for her, from a winning perspective, for her CV, it's all about the international level. She'll be in the Olympics this year with France. She'll play in another European Championships with France. And, you know, more than likely, we'll probably play in another World Cup for France. And if France is at full strength, they're one of those teams that she kind of don't really want to play. They're kind of like the men's team. When they're on, you're not going to beat them.
Yeah.
You know, when they don't show up, you know, you and I could put together a group of 10-year-olds that would beat them. With Sakina, the other thing that doesn't make sense to me is that she's a bona fide star at PSG. You know, her competition, it's her, then everyone behind her. She goes to Barcelona. She's not going to start every game. She's going to have to learn how to fit into another system. I just look at it and I'm like, it doesn't make sense. And then here's the other thing. Barcelona doesn't have the damn money. Barcelona was asking Alexa Putellas to take a pay cut. So when this thing came out yesterday, Owen, remind you, this rumor of her going to Barcelona came out like seconds after the Coupe de France final ended. I'm like, you know, these people over there had another level of low that I just haven't seen. Ever.
Yeah.
It's like, first of all, she, like a few of the women's players, have been really good about being low-key with the way that they handle their business. It's not out there screaming, saying, hey, I want to leave, boom, boom, boom. My guess is that she's going to renew her contract, you know, for probably another year or two. And then I think she's going to end up coming to the U.S. That's just the way I see it. I think
That
could be wrong. I mean, I know as much as the next, but just looking at the way things are, just her going to Barcelona makes no sense at all.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned now, I'm not quite sure you were saying that she has multiple Champions League. I don't know if she's got, because I don't think, she wasn't in Lyon for very long time. I'm not sure if she's got multiple. I'm not even sure if she's got one, but she certainly has won a lot. Or do you have like a concrete information? Are you sure that she's won it there? I'm not sure.
My understanding was that she came through Lyon's system. You know what? I'm sorry. She came through Montpellier. She was at Lyon from 2021. Oop, that's the year. Did they win that year?
Because I was thinking that if that was a year that Barcelona
won. Yeah, they won Champions League that year.
Okay.
The only year they won.
There you have it. That's a little bit of trivia there, but it was just something that I wasn't quite sure if it was, but now we know. So anyway, so we will see how it's going to happen with her. You already mentioned Tapita Chawing, our Malawian Wonder Woman. She's just been really, really great, and she's currently on loan, and we need to get her fully contracted as our player. These are some of the things that are currently in the air. But we have an interesting team for midfield. We have people like our captain Chris Chioro, Jackie Kroonen, Orian Jean-Francois been injured for some time, but I really like her. She's like one I was talking about, the number sixes, the defensive midfielders in the men's team. Like she's like understated professional. She just does what needs to happen there. I really enjoy watching her play. I think she's a very sort of like, she's got a good mentality as well, a very, very trustworthy. Then there's Corbin Albert, who was now with the U.S. national team, winning a trophy over there, that side. And then we, of course, have Lorena Fascher also, quite a strong midfield player. I mean, there are some others also, but there's a quite a good midfield there.
You left out Jackie Kroonen, and I think that when I think of like our top players at PSG, for me, it's Chawinga, Kashawi, Grace Guerrero, and Jackie Gronin. I think Grace and Jackie, for me, are like, I'll put them up against any other midfielders on the planet. Grace is so strong on the ball that it's scary how much better he's gotten, you know. And I think I would love to see Grace really just be encouraged to start to take over games. She's one of those players that could literally just dictate a game if she decides to do it. I mean, but watching her on the ball is like, wow, you just can't. I'm just fascinated at how much stronger she is on the ball. And it wasn't like she was weak to begin with.
Yeah.
But she and Jackie Gronin work so well together that, you know, it kind of helps make up for not having Orion Jean-Francois, but when she's back, it's gonna be a nice problem for Prashir to have, to see how he's gonna incorporate those three, or are you bringing someone? You know, are you rotating?
Yeah.
The women's team. Like I said, I'm really excited because the balance of the younger players, the older players, it's almost near perfect. So now it's just a matter of getting more playing time for younger players because my belief is, you don't get better if you don't play.
Yeah. And I think that one of those things also is that we have, I mean, whatever is the definition of a world-class player, but I would say that we have a good handful of world-class players. When you think about it, you were mentioning Grace Chioro, Jackie Kroonen, Sakina Karshawi, Marie-Antoinette Katoto, maybe not currently on his best yet after a long, long injury, but certainly see on her daisy is that. Tapita Chawinga, yes, is absolutely there in the conversation. And I would say that it's been so great to see Sandy Baltimore also. This season has been very good for her. Last season was a little bit, it wasn't her best, but just back to on a very high level, I find, and it's a joy to watch. So we've got a lot of great players, but then there's like a few spots that are a little bit of more of a question mark. And one of the challenges that we've had is the defense, and you were talking about the defense and the system that we've been playing. We have new player, another new North American player, Eva Getino. She's a quality player, very exciting. She's only been there since January, but very exciting player, as is Teniba Samura. she has been maybe one of biggest surprises this season for me. She's been really solid in defense. And then on paper, you have players like Elisa de Almeida. She's great, but she's also very accident prone. Things just tend to happen around her, which is a little bit of a problem, that she can be like, you know, 89 minutes of really good football, and then just one crazy mistake like happened against Lyon. And it has happened before also last year in the Champions League and so on and so on. Then also we have Jade Lequille. She's good. Kasia, we already mentioned about her. And then Polina Dudek, she should eventually be back. But two long-term injuries. She's been 2 years, pretty much 2 years, two seasons away from football. So never know how this is going to back. How do you look at our defense? Is there a need for a starter? Is there still need for like one proper defender, considering that injuries may come, or are we good with these ones that we currently have?
I'm actually fine with this team defensively. Yeah, I think with the women's team, it's a matter of just getting that, you know, there's some players that we need to get rid of, first of all. That was probably one of the things that really upset me, was that you brought in players that you didn't use. You know, you brought in some very good players who should have never been brought in. They got no playing time. And I think that's one of the things that hurts you in the long run, when you start to recruit players from those particular countries, where it's like, wait, we saw this person who starts on our women's national team, and you didn't, you know, she didn't see the light of day. You know, am I sure do I, you know, don't want to get into that? I think that happened because there was a breakdown between whoever signing players and what the coach needs. That needs to be rectified. Defensively, I think we're fine. If there's one player, a big name player, that I would say it might be time to, you know, let her go, I'm thinking of Lika Martins, someone that I like a lot. You know, her first year, I cut her some slack. I'm like, okay, she's in a completely different system, and so, you know, the struggle is real. But this year, I'm like, okay, you don't have that excuse anymore. You know, what the heck's going on here? You know, I compare her to Jackie Gronin, where Jackie came in, and I think adjusting as a midfielder is a heck of a lot harder than adjusting in any other position. And it took Jackie probably about 4 or 5 games to figure out her role within the system. And then once she, you know, hit her stride, it's been like smooth sailing for the most part. With Lika Van Martins, you know, I'm still like, what's going on here? And I see her problems, who's going to play where? And they were basically playing, almost fighting for the same position from what I saw. And I think Sandy Baltimore, you know, gotten her confidence back, worked on her game, and it's showing. But with Lika Van Martins, I'm like, it's not fitting. And I think it has more to do with the system we play. Because when I've seen her play with the Netherlands, she's been okay. But when she played with PSG, it's like, you know, I don't think you're being placed in the right spot.
I think that who I would compare Lika Martins to is Lionel Messi. Now, there's always a little bit of a, you know, pressure when you make such comparisons, but she is a kind of, she came from Barcelona, where she had won. She has already won a lot in her career. She's kind of like, she's paid her dues. She's achieved a great things, and now she's coming somewhere where she's getting a lot of money. Of course, we're talking about the different types of lot of money, but still, she's getting a good salary there, and she just doesn't sort of like have that passion for the shirt, and she doesn't seem to care very much. Whatever happens, Lika Martins is not going to be remembered as a PSG player. When she retires one day, she's going to be, you know, remembered as a Barcelona player, most likely, and maybe next year she's going to be playing in North America or somewhere else, something like that. But I think that it just is what it is, and I don't know I mean, it sounds like I'm kind of blaming her for that. I don't know if it's her fault, but it just seems that she hasn't had that. Whereas somebody like Jackie Cronin, PSG is her team. She's working to be known and remembered as the PSG player, whether she will play for us for the rest of her professional career or for certainly for the some years to come. That we don't know, but she's working hard to create her status in the world of football, whereas Lika Martensi already has that, and a little bit the same issue, but in a slightly less so, but is Ramona Bachmann, and I think that it's time for these. It's a lot of experience, but I think that we start having other players with a lot of experience as well, like Raskeoro, for instance, and Katoto and Karshawi and players like that. So I think I would also agree with you, as you were saying, that it's also about who needs to go and then some good replacements for those players. And I think we're good to go.
You're right with Bachmann. She's someone that I think it's time for her to go, mainly because she's one of the older players on the team. You know, I'm not sure how many more years she's play, but she needs to start. You know, I think she'd do really well. And the, In the league in the U.S., I think she did really well here. And it's a matter of, you know, because she, I think her contract is up in a couple of years. So it's a matter of, you know, they're looking to transfer her or what's going on. But Bachmann, I hate to see her come off the bench and not get the minutes that she would get probably at any other club.
Mm.
And I think, you know, those two players, because remember, there are a couple of younger players that are coming in. The one player from Haiti, the under 16, under 17.
Oh, yes. I can't remember her name, but she looked really great. I only saw some of the highlight reels, but nevertheless, they looked really great, yeah.
You know, and remember, we also have, you know, Adeyewan, who's just signed to her first pro contract. So they're going to be looking for her to get more playing time. And the funny thing about PSG women's team more so than the men. I don't know who's doing the scouting in North America, but they seem to like come out with fill up with an empty hat and pull out rabbits all the time. It's kind of like, where the hell did you find this person? You know, it's like, it was kind of like when they popped up with Corbin Albert. I remember talking with a friend of mine in Chicago. I'm like, what do you know about it? He goes, oh, dude, he goes, I've seen this kid play since she was like 10 and she's always been good. And I'm like, okay. When I watch youth football, I don't, you know, there are very few youth players that stick out in my mind. I just don't analyze or view youth players that way because, you know, maturity and everything else. But when this, you know, when this friend of mine's told me that, I'm like, okay, this is a big deal because he's not one of these people that's going to embellish on players. I mean, you know, so that said a lot. And then the fact that she went to Notre Dame, I'm like, I know that if I've never seen them, I know they're good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because of where they're playing. So, in terms of player recruitment, I'm fascinated how they always manage to get some really good players. And it's just like they pop up like, oh, we got this person. It's like, wait a minute. You know, you got, they kept this quiet and you got this player that seems to be pretty good. So, you know, they're going to have to make some room there. But I think the biggest holdup right now is how much is it going to cost to keep Chiwenga?
Yeah.
You know, and it ain't going to be cheap. I mean, he could very well be the first player that they splash $1 million on.
Yeah. But at the same time, if PSG wants to, they of course will have that money. And then it's a question of priorities. And she would really solve such a huge challenge for the club. Because when Kadi Diani left the team last summer, it was a bit like, well, how do you replace a player of that caliber? And then sort of like from China came a Malawian attacker. You wouldn't have guessed that this is the way that it's going to be. But I have not been missing Diani, I must say, who, of course, I enjoyed as long as she was a PSG player. I was supporting her very much, less these days. But when there's a will, there's a way, and I hope that this is what they're going to do. And she seems to, Chiwenga seems to enjoy her life in Paris. She seems to have, you know, made herself a home in the squad as well. So let's hope that she will also sign and she will be given a contract that she can sign. basically.
Yeah.
When at the end of the season they have the sort of the all-star, sort of like a best 11 from the French Dijon, which by the way is quite easily the best quality-wise, the best league in women's football in Europe, if you consider that two of the teams, the only country, only league where that has two teams in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, and it was very close that neither one of those two teams even made to the French Cup final. So there's Paris FC that PSG then in the end won on penalty shootout. They knocked out last year's runner-up in the from the Champions League final, Wolfsburg and Real Madrid. So there certainly French league is a very good league, and from that when they select the best 11 of the season, even if Lyon would win, PSG might still have one player more in the best 11. That's the interesting thing about the team, is that we really have like a good handful of world class players, and then it's just about how well those other parts work around it, and sometimes it has been recently more so that Lyon has been a little bit better as a team perhaps, but now I think that hopefully that time is also coming to its end.
I think it is, and I think, you know, what's hastening that is the fact that Bonpastor is not a good manager. She really is not a good manager. Sidetrack here. I watched their Coupe de France match the other day against Fleury, and post-match, Lyon's complaining about officiating, and I'm kind of like, no, she screwed up. Mm. You know, it's like that match should have been over before it started, and she didn't make her adjustments. She got it wrong every step of the way. You know, then they're complaining about the foul on Ada Hegerberg, but I'm like, but Ada initiated that whole thing. He's like, Ada should have been booked for basically harassing the goalkeeper, because what you're doing, you're not, you know, legally you're not supposed to do that. The goalkeeper should have probably been booked for, or should have been booked for the kick out. But I was like, but then all of these started because Ada initiated it. You guys acting like she's, you know, innocent here. I'm like, there ain't nothing innocent about that one, the way that woman plays. Every time they play, and especially at PSG, you know, they get a little bit more physical than they're given credit for. And they get away with stuff, and then they scream about officiating. I'm like, you guys are the last ones that should be screaming about officiating. It's like, you guys have a loaded team. You don't need to play that way, and you are. And that's purely on Bonpastor. I'm kind of hoping in a twisted way that she goes to Chelsea.
Yeah.
Because I think it's going to be a crash and burn for them. I just don't think she's very good manager at all.
Well, there are not many things that are guaranteed in life. The sun sets and it rises, and Lyon's women's team players are complaining about the officiating. The way they are doing it is incredibly, it's a very sort of extreme way of doing all kinds of crud, dirty tricks on the pitch, and then complaining about everything as if they are the receiving end of it. And it's a very unappealing thing to watch. Of course, I'm not a huge fan of them. On the contrary, I have some issues as they are our nemesis. But nevertheless, they do like to make a big show, and think that that they are always somehow on the losing edge of everything. But such is life. Thank you so much, Al. It's been really great to talk to you about all these PSG topics today. Much appreciated.
Likewise. So, and looking forward to talking to you guys again soon. And so, you know, we'll see what's going on with the rest of the season.
That is all for this episode of PSG Review. The next match for the men's team is on Wednesday. That is Coupe de France quarterfinal match against Nice. I mean, you might be listening to this after that match, and that's okay. That's something that happens with podcasts. But if you know how it went when you hear this, well, I hope it went well. After that, we will learn our next opponent in the Champions League and then travel to Montpellier on the weekend as well, before the week has been finished. Women will play Saint-Étienne on the weekend, and next week Wednesday they will be in Sweden for the first leg of the Champions League quarterfinals, then against BK Häcken in Gothenburg. A lot of excitement in the air for both of these teams. That's the way that I like it. My name is Mikko. Thank you so much for having spent this time with us. Until next time, peace.